Join me on May 13th to the 21st on our Paraguay Investors Tour. Earlier this year, I unveiled an exciting real estate project in Paraguay that sold out in one day. Now, you can come down to Paraguay side by side with me to learn about what everyone was so excited about and even see new exciting projects you can participate in. We will also examine residency, banking, safety, and many other important aspects of a proper Plan B. Join us for this luxury tour to Paraguay on May 13th to the 21st, and tickets include all food, alcohol, transport, activities, hotel stay, and domestic flights. For more information, please email Susan James from my team at trips@expatmoney.com or visit our tours page at expatmoney.com. Email trips@expatmoney.com for more information. All Expat Money subscribers are welcome to join me for this trip. Seats are filling up fast. Email trips@expatmoney.com.
We all dream of seeing the world, but the realities of living somewhere outside your place of birth can be daunting, to say the least. Welcome to the Expat Money Show, helping you make the most out of your overseas career through conversations with successful expats on investing, entrepreneurship, self-improvement, and continual education, all while sharpening your financial acumen. Now please welcome your host, with over 20 years of overseas experience, Mikkel Thorup.
Okay, before we jump in, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine. His name is Sven Lawrence, and he is unbelievably smart. I got connected with him probably about a year ago, and we've started talking a lot, like on a really regular basis. I really like the way that his mind works. His investment strategy is really based on finding undervalued stocks around the world, not just domestic. Now, he's scooping up different companies across the globe at amazing prices, and his returns are phenomenal. You guys can actually follow along with a lot of his knowledge and information on his weekly dispatch. You guys can check it out at expatmoneyshow.com/undervalued. We're actually going to be doing a lot more work together, and I'm really excited about this partnership here. So guys, get to know him, get to know his work. If you guys are interested in stocks, in investing in equities, in companies, then this is the guy that you want to follow. You can go to expatmoneyshow.com/undervalued to sign up for his free newsletter. He has a paid newsletter as well as a lifetime subscription. They are also worth checking out. I am actually a lifetime member myself. I love his special reports. They are fantastic. He has a little bit of humor in them. He is really intelligent, goes into a deep analysis, but doesn't make it dry or unfun to read. So, fully endorse this. I really am excited about it, and I hope you guys get a chance to take a look. Go to expatmoneyshow.com/undervalued, all one word, undervalued. Okay, let's jump into today's interview. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Mikkel Thorup, and this is the Expat Money Show. Today's guest is the author of Berlin's Immigration Secrets. If you dream about greener pastures overseas, but find the immigration process to be a daunting one, this book will provide you with the guidance needed to successfully achieve your goals. It is a complete guide to the immigration process in Germany based on his own experiences, including several little-known facts and insights, all in the form of a memoir. Please welcome to the show, Erez Aga. Erez, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Mikkel.
Well, very happy to have you here. You know what? We've never talked about Germany on the show. We've never had someone on to explain the process and what life is like there. So I've been to Germany many times. It's one of my favorite countries in the world. So I'm really excited to learn from you kind of the other side of it. But maybe before we get going, why don't you kind of walk us through your backstory? How did you become an expat? Why Germany? I want to hear it all.
Well, Mikkel, I thought about immigration for a very long time. In fact, when I was a kid, I thought about it a lot. I was very curious. I always wondered what it's like to live elsewhere, to experience new culture, meet new people. And it was always in the back of my mind. And as I grew up, I traveled to more and more different destinations around the world. So every time I had a chance, I used to go on vacation in a certain location. All of my money I've earned, I spent on vacations and traveling. So I visited lots of countries. And then I reached a certain point when I decided that I wanted to immigrate myself. And the question is, why did I choose Germany? Now, when people say immigration, you immediately think about the U.S. The U.S. Used to be a very well-known immigration destination, very popular immigration destinations back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. But things are now beginning to change. Right now, more and more people are coming to Europe, especially Germany. So when I've done my research, actually, I was searching for a certain destination. And the four main reasons I've chose Germany were the following. One, we're talking about a strong economy and a low crime rate. So the country has the strongest economy in Europe, and it provides long-term benefits for its citizens and residents. It's also combined a social economy with a capitalistic one, and it ranks as a country with a low crime rate, feels very safe to work around its major cities. The second reason is a low cost of living and apartment rent. While other major cities in the world, such as London or New York, have a very high cost of living, Berlin's cost of living is still low, even though it's changing right now. It's getting more and more capitalistic. And unlike other cities, it is not all industrials, and there are a lot of green areas, lots of parks. So it's very fun, very enjoyable to wander around the streets. The third reason is my desire to study a new language. Now, for many, studying a new language is considered to be a burden. But I had a really strong desire to study a new language. And in fact, I was intrigued by that. I studied the German language with fun, and I had a great time to go to my German lessons. And you know, I've done it with love. I've done it with passion. The fourth reason is my possession of an Israeli passport, and I explain. After I've been doing my research, I found out that Germany is allowing Israelis to search for job opportunities within its borders without requiring a specific visa to do so. So it means that you can go there, and then once you find a job or a source of income, you can stay immediately. You don't have to leave the country for visa purposes. And in addition to that, Germany has a list of privileged countries like Israel, New Zealand, the UK, the US, Australia, Canada, Japan. So these countries, the citizens of those countries can come to Germany, find a job, and then once they do, they can stay immediately. And those were the main four reasons why I chose Germany as my destination.
Okay, so that is many things that we need to break down there. I mean, I want to talk about the language. I want to talk about the immigration side. I mean, when you looked at this process for choosing a country, it sounds to be very analytical. Like you made a matrix and decided on Germany. Was that how it was, or was there an emotional thing? Was there anything like, oh, I really want to go to Germany because I love the food, or the language is amazing, or the people are beautiful, or et cetera, et cetera? What was the emotional ties there?
I'll explain, because this is a really, really good question you're asking. Now, for me as an Israeli, when somebody said the word Germany, I immediately thought about the World War II, Holocaust, maybe cold people. All those memories were in the back of my mind, because there are a lot of stigmas out there. But people need to understand that the country has changed dramatically over the years. And, you know, nowadays it's considered to be one of the most popular destinations out there in the terms of immigration. So I heard stories about leaving there. I've done my research. And the question that you just asked is a very, very important question, because I thought about immigration. That's why I would like to focus for a second on the word immigration, because this is a very strong word. I don't really like the phrase moving to Germany or relocating to Germany. I like the phrase immigrating to Germany, and I'll explain. Unlike relocating or moving, immigration is when you leave your native country in order to stay permanently in your new destination. And this is what I wanted to do. I knew exactly that I want to stay permanently there. I knew that it's not like I want to try it out. This is what I've been thinking for many, many years, and this is what I want to do. So I actually, you know, I thought about what it's like. I even imagined before, and I actually sketched, like I didn't have a specific plan, but I had general goals, and I wanted to achieve those goals. And that's why it's really, really important. Now, if you are relocating, it may turn out to be, an immigration at the end of the process, but not the other way around. So for me, I knew exactly that I wanted to enjoy the social economy model. And I knew that Berlin was an international city, and I knew that I had lots of opportunities there. And that's why I took it as a mission. I took it and I took it very, very seriously. And once again, you know, I write in the book that in order to succeed, you need to take it very, very seriously. And you need to work tremendously hard. And otherwise, you know, it will take a longer time, obviously.
But that doesn't still answer my question, though, of the emotional attachment. Like, I'm trying to figure out, to dig in, like, why Germany? Because I understand from the analytical side, but, I mean, the world is a very, very big place. And I'm not saying anything bad about Germany. Like I said in my intro, it is absolutely one of my favorite countries. But I'm trying to understand from you, why is it the country that you would want to move to and spend your life? Or someone, put another way, is if someone is listening to this today, why would they want to put Germany on the map for a place that they should migrate to?
I visited Germany in 2012 as a tourist, and I really liked it. And for me, I like Berlin because it's not like any other European city. And I'll explain. Berlin has a history. I'm a person who likes history. And for me, it was very, very interesting to live in a city with a lot of history. Now we're not talking about only the World War II or you know the wall. We're talking way back. You know, the city have changed over the years, and you know even when I look at Berlin nowadays, you know it always has mixed of emotions, and I'll explain. It has a sad side, and it has also a happy side. Sad side because you know this city was traumatized. During World War II, and after that, the wall, people were not able to see their relatives from a very long time. So they were separated from their loved ones. And a happy side because even throughout the difficult times, nowadays you look at Berlin and it has a completely different vibe. We're talking about clubs, parties, except the others. A lot of festivals, a lot of markets, a lot of, you know, it's a lively city. That's why it's a very, very interesting city to live in.
Well, like I said, I love Germany. I mean, I've been to Germany so, so many times. I've not had a chance to go to Berlin, but I have heard that, as you mentioned, like the clubs and the restaurants and the nightlife and the cafe culture is unbelievable there, that it's really a hot spot in Europe. I actually met my wife in Germany, but we met in Frankfurt. Well, technically we met on an airplane heading to Frankfurt, but then spent time there. Usually when I go to Germany, it's always been Bavaria, and I just go there and eat my face off or go to Oktoberfest or something like that. So first of all, what year did you actually get to Germany when you migrated there? And then since then, have you had a chance to travel through the rest of the country? Or is really Berlin like the focus of everything?
Yes, I had a chance to travel in different cities inside Germany as well. I was in Lubenau, which is a small town. I was in Leipzig, Potsdam, also Munich, Cuxhaven, Dresden. And I must say that, you know, if I look at other cities, I think Berlin is the most interesting one because of it's considered the international one, more international one than the others. But also, for example, you know, there are some places that are more conservative than others. But I think in general speaking, when you look at the country, it changed completely. Of course, you know, we're talking about more tolerance. We're talking about more patience toward the different people that are coming from different parts of the world. And this is, I think, what's unique about the city. For example, I just recently came back from Cuxhaven. And it's like, you know, it's a small city located in the west north part of Germany. There's a beautiful beach there. You'll feel completely disconnected from the rest of Germany when you're traveling there. There are absolutely no foreigners, only Germans when I went there. And it's a beautiful area. You feel like you're in a way traveling into a small part in Scandinavia, for example. In Munich, for example, it's a smaller city than Berlin, but it has museums, it has lots of nice restaurants. It depends on the area, of course. It depends on the area. Bavarians are more conservatives. So it really depends. It's a very diverse country at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Every city or town that I've been to there feels, I mean, almost like a new country. I mean, there's underlying themes that run through, but certainly Bavaria to Frankfurt to Düsseldorf or something like this, these are very, very dramatically different places, which is so interesting. I'm Canadian, and being born and raised in Canada, you could go 1,000 kilometers, you could go 5,000 kilometers. And when you meet people, they're pretty much the same. I mean, with the small difference in and around Quebec City, Montreal, in Quebec province, I mean, the majority of the Canadians are very, very similar. Calgary to Toronto, not a huge difference. If you went 1,000 kilometers in Europe, I mean, it would be completely different. Even 100 kilometers in Germany, and there's so many different things there.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to Canada, I've been to Toronto and Vancouver. Obviously those cities are different.
And what year did you come to Germany? You said you came first as a tourist, and then what time did you actually move there?
Yeah, I visited the country as a tourist in 2012, and then I immigrated in 2016.
So explain to me what it was like when you first arrived in Germany. And, you know, we can talk about the immigration process possibly next, as in the visas and the legal right to live and work there. But I'm kind of curious, like, once again, from the emotional side, you know, did you make friends easily? Did you find a network? Were you able to find work, a home, you know, all of the personal side of things?
Okay, so let's go back to 2016 when I came to Germany. So the thing is, I came with absolutely no connections. I just came with a suitcase. I had no working visa, no apartment, no, absolutely no connections. And I needed to start everything from scratch. I arrived, I had a very, very tough landing. I arrived at winter time. We're talking about November 2016. And as I arrived there, it was snowing.
Probably not a lot of snow in Israel, I'm guessing.
Well, it depends. It depends on which part. In Jerusalem, you can find snow occasionally once in a while. I really had a tough landing because I didn't know anyone. I mean, it was a bit depressing, the whole winter season, and I needed to find my way. And of course, you know, no matter how much you read about immigration, nothing can prepare for your real journey. And I just, you know, I remember myself going through the Airbnb apartment, which I've already booked before my arrival. And then, you know, I was just researching my way. I've done everything. I was multitasking, basically. So I needed to find an apartment, and then I needed to find a job because I was able to stay up to 3 months. And then I was not allowed to extend my stay after that immediately, because there is a foreigner agency that you need to go and set up your status. So everything was like I needed to do everything really, really fast. I didn't have time to waste. So I need to find an apartment. But then again, you know, the problem in Berlin that it's really hard to find an apartment because, like myself, you have new immigrants coming all the time. So you have to compete. I mean, there are more demand than you can imagine. So if you apply, you gotta understand that like you, there are other immigrants, and all of them go to the same landlord or the person who rent them the apartment, and you know they only choose one. All right, so that was one struggle. The other struggle was, of course, the job market, because once again, companies in Berlin receive every week thousands of resumes from people all over the world. Another one is, of course, the language barrier. Most of the jobs are in German, not in English. And then again, if you apply for an English position, like you, people who also speaks English needs to, you'll have to compete with them as well. So I needed to do everything. I was very, very busy. I worked like crazy. I had actually an advantage because I was completely focused on my goals. So I was living immigration 24 hours. So I needed to work all the time. Then again, you know, I must say I had a slight advantage because I am a bilingual, and once you're bilingual, you don't have to all the time focus on the English market. You can also focus on the Hebrew market as well. This is the advantage of bilingual of people who speak more than one language when they come to Berlin, because they don't have to focus only on the English job market. I even gave an example in my book. So if let's say an Italian immigrant who comes to Berlin to find a position, to find a job. And let's say he doesn't speak German. Let's say he speaks Italian and English. All right. He will be able to focus on the English job market and then also on the Italian job market. Okay. Because there are a lot of jobs, because we're talking about international city. So there are projects all over. And an American immigrant who will come to Berlin, and let's say he only speaks English, he will only be able to focus on the English job market. Therefore, the Italian has an advantage over the American in that way. You know, I started to research. I ran you some websites. I applied. I kept applying. You know, I received lots of rejections until, you know, I was going to interviews all the time. And then I was able to find a job after 4 months. Once I found a job, you know, I started to work. I gained my working visa. And from there, I was able to, I had more time, let's say this, to focus on other parts, like studying the language, finding apartment for a long term. But then again, you have more struggles because you always have, you know, you always have to find stability. You have new challenge all the time. And the most interesting part about the book, that it's exactly what happened. So people are able to see exactly what happened to me and the journey I've been through throughout the whole process. So therefore, it provides the best perspective that you can get.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone who's actually been through the process, opposed to just, you know, reading about it online or watching some YouTube videos and trying to recreate it. I mean, certainly, I mean, that's why when I travel and I write about these things, these are all based on first person perspective. I mean, I actually gone through it. We just got back from 6 months in Brazil, and our process through immigration, that did not go perfect by any means. And I work in immigration and I help people with immigration, and still there was so many problems with it. So I definitely think learning from people who actually do things is definitely the way to go. So explain to me, when you got your job, did the company have to sponsor you, or you get a job and then you just go and register yourself that you have a job and Germany allows you to stay? What does that piece look like?
So, yes, you have to find a company that will sponsor, that will provide you a sponsorship for the visa. The good thing is that 99% of companies will sponsor you, all right? In rare cases, they will not. It really depends on the company, but most cases they do. If you are a skilled worker, you know that you can contribute to that company, you know that you have value. I mean, why not? Why not? That's the thing. You know, if an employer see you as a valuable worker, he will gladly provide you a sponsorship.
Well, I've been sponsored a couple of times in different countries. I've had very easy processes and I've had extremely complex, large and arduous processes as well. I remember when I was in Singapore, it took me about 10 months to find a job and to actually find a company that would sponsor me. Actually, technically, I would have had a job the first week, but the company was never willing to sponsor me. So although they would have wanted to take me on, they didn't actually want to take on the responsibility for all the legal work and the immigration process. Because in that country, it was not a common thing to do. And this is going back almost 15 years probably. But it's good to hear that Germany is open to hiring foreigners and allowing them to stay, and not just people from the European Union. Because, okay, we understand how this works. If you're from Italy, going up to Germany is probably not a big deal. But for an Israeli or a Canadian or an American who's listening to this, to come over to Europe is quite a big thing. I mean, not something that is normally done or is easy to do. So it's good to hear that Germany does open this up.
And I want to reply also. See, the thing is, Germany right now seeks a young labor force. The population is getting older. That's why the whole procedure is easier. And therefore, let's say it's much easier to immigrate to Germany nowadays than to the US, for example. I also would like to say that you got to believe in yourself. You got to believe in your abilities. You got to know what you're getting into. You got to try. This is why I mentioned how to get out of your comfort zone, because otherwise you will not succeed. And, you know, what I've noticed that a lot of successful immigrants come from, many of them, let's say this, come from poorer countries. Have you ever asked yourself why?
I would assume, actually, I have asked myself why, and it's because they believe that there's more opportunities in greener pastures. I mean, the grass is always greener on the other side. I don't know if that is necessarily the case, as most my people now are going to from the U.S. to developing countries because there's more freedom actually overseas.
Well, I can tell you that they are not spoiled. They know that they're suffering in their native countries. They have depression, and they know that they have no choice. They are immigrants by all means. So they know that they are going and they are going to stay no matter what. That's why they are willing to do whatever it takes. It has nothing to do whether they have the formal education or not, whether they will have visas issues or not. And this is why I'm also mentioning the immigration spirit in my book. Because what I've noticed is like in order to succeed in an immigration process, you need to have a character, you need to have like an immigrant character, and you need to be very, very tough mentally. And this is why a lot of immigrants from poor countries, why they are being successful at the end, because they are willing to pay any price. And that's what happens. I mean, you meet maybe people who work in simple jobs. Maybe they are cleaners. Maybe they are waiters. Maybe they selling stuff on the streets. It doesn't matter. They manage to succeed. They already live in Berlin for, I don't know, 20 years, and they manage to do it. And for me, you know, I state at the beginning of my book, I ask a question: is it possible to immigrate? What does it take to immigrate? And then you see that people have already done it before. And then you see what made them succeed. I mean, we're talking about a very, very strong mentally state that you must have. You know, when I came at a certain point, I couldn't find any apartment. You know, it was very, very hard. So I found myself staying at a hostel with 8 people in the same room. You know, I didn't care, you know, so, you know, I've done it with fun and, you know, I've continued my journey. So for me, you know, I was very, very determined no matter what. And that's what I also mentioned in the book. You need to know exactly what you're getting into, because there are a lot of people who just come to Germany. Maybe they do not have a lot of life experience. Maybe they're too young. And they eventually go back to their native countries.
Well, and add to that, I think a lot of people in the US and Canada really don't realize that as work has gone remote, as people are now working from home and businesses in the world is starting to open up, I don't think a lot of these people will come back. There's so much entitlement that actually now we know, now the employers know how to hire people overseas, to manage a team overseas. Why are they going to continue to pay all of these exorbitant expenses and social security and all of these types of things when actually you can hire someone in Mexico or India or the Philippines or any one of 1,000 countries, not 1,000 countries, 193 countries, but that the people are really hungry. I mean, like super hungry to work and will work their butts off and are not going to complain all day long and feel like they're entitled to everything. So we used to be constrained to, okay, we had to hire in our geographical location, or maybe we could put something out to the state. Actually, this has sped it up so fast that now you can hire from anywhere in the world. People will start work at midnight and finish at 8 a.m. their local time so that they can be on Eastern Standard Time. You can hire them remote. The people have strong English abilities around the world. There's so many things. So it's almost a warning for Western cultures that you better watch out and you better start working because there's other people who will happily do the job for you.
Yeah, and that's another thing that happens nowadays. A lot of companies open branches different parts of the world to save costs. So you can find, let's say, a company that was established in Berlin, for example. But in Berlin itself, the company hires maybe 6 or 7 employees, and other branches, the company has obviously other branches, and then you'll be able to find there more employees, obviously. So it really depends the structure of the company. It's all about, you know, if, once again, we're getting into costs and entrepreneurship, but this is what happens today, you're right.
Yeah. Well, I remember growing up and my family worked unionized jobs. And as the unions came in and wanted more money, demanded more money, demanded more money, some of the factories actually closed down in southwestern Ontario and they moved the companies to New Mexico or to Central America or something like that. And I remember my family and everyone getting so bent out of shape. How could they do this? How could they do this? Well, I mean, you have no education, your skills are not overly specialized, and you're getting $55 or $65 an hour, and they can hire someone in Mexico to do it for $5 an hour or $6 an hour. Now, you might say, oh, well, that's not fair. But at the same time, these are publicly traded companies, and they have a fiduciary responsibility to increase the shareholder value. So the shares are held by different types of funds around the world and pension funds and everything like that. Well, they also have the responsibility to make sure the company is as profitable as possible. So you can't just say, oh, it's not fair. I mean, there has to be some type of a give where people are really going to work for these types of things. So I think that this does come into play a lot of time with immigration, and the downfall of the West is that people are becoming too comfortable. I think as this goes on, we need to realize that people need to roll up their sleeves and work again. Otherwise, immigrant families are going to come and going to do the job harder, better, faster. They're going to smile, say thank you very much, and they're going to provide for their kids. And we're going to have the next generation. So, I mean, that's just something to think about. Okay, we're just going to take a quick break. We have recently started Expat Money on YouTube. I am really excited about this. You know, I've been putting off doing video content for years and years and years, and I wish that I didn't. I don't know what it was. Something about it just made it look like too much work, or maybe no one's going to enjoy it, or I don't know what the problem was. But recently, I got involved in YouTube, and I'm actually having a lot of fun. So first of all, we're taking all of the best podcast episodes, and we're putting them in the video content on the channel. Next, we're going to be doing original content. We're going to be putting out a lot of videos from our travels while I go and look at different investments, foreign real estate, foreign stock markets, private gold vaults, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's going to be a ton of new content that's coming out there. But you know what, guys? It's really up to you. Because if this platform gets traction, then I'll put more time, energy, effort, and money into it. And if it doesn't get traction, well, then I'm not going to do it because obviously you guys don't care. I only want to put out stuff that you guys are really interested in. So Show your love. Go to expatmoneyshow.com/YouTube. Subscribe to the channel. Leave us some comments. Give us a good work, a high five, you know, a bit of encouragement. We really appreciate it. It goes a long way. We do all of this content for free for you guys. So show a bit of love. That's it. Let's jump back into the interview. But to circle back to immigration specifically from Germany, I am curious. So you found a job. You found a company that is willing to sponsor you. What did the little piece look like of actually applying for your residency to be there, to stay in the country? How does that piece look?
So that's the thing. Once you get a working visa, you have a stamp in your passport. And that stamp states residency. I always thought it was a working visa. But apparently, once you have a job, you newly receive your residency. And the residency is because you have a job. That's the thing. I always thought it was called a working visa. Mm-hmm. But it's a residency permit due to the fact that you have a job.
Okay, so pause for a second. So let me ask you, if you quit that job, do you lose the visa? Or do you keep the visa and can go out there and get another job? Like, is it connected, those two things?
I'll explain. So it really depends on your contract. If a company is willing to give you, let's say, 1 year contract, this is going to be the length of your visa. Okay, so after 1 year, you have to extend your residency, obviously. All right, so either you will stay in the company or you find a new job, but you need to, once again, to set up your status all over again. All right, now the good thing is, in Germany, everything is with contracts. So, you know, even if you want to rent an apartment, they must give you a contract. If you enter a company, they must give you a contract. And why do I say it's good? Because they have employees' rights in Germany. So it means that they take care of you if somebody hurts your right, for example. Furthermore, at some point, after 2 years, they must decide, okay, Mikhail, you can have unlimited contract with us, or we are letting you go. So it's another thing that will eventually lead to stability, all right? And this is why one of the main reasons why a lot of immigrants are coming to Germany, because they seek for stability. Many of them, they don't care about opening up their own businesses or are being a freelancers, or they just want stability. They just want to have a stable job for a long term. And that's why it's very appealing to many, many immigrants. You can receive your unlimited contract before the 2 years period. It really depends. If the company feels that you're a contributor, of course they will give it to you before. But either way, after 2 years, they must decide, okay, you will receive your unlimited contract or we are letting you go.
So they can't just string you along forever and then you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Exactly.
At this 24 months, they have to make a decision. Okay, interesting.
This is why it's called a social economy model, you know?
So you get the job contract. You take, I assume, your passport. You go down to immigration office. You make an application by yourself. You need a lawyer. You use a service provider. How does that look?
Okay, so once you have a job contract, you take that contract, you take the passport, you take two passport photos. You go there. This is another important thing. You take your Anmeldung. What is Anmeldung? Is a document that states that you already have an apartment. You already have a place to stay.
Ah, okay. So can you use an Airbnb to qualify, or you have to have like a long-term rental?
No. So this is somebody who says, okay, I'm giving you an Anmeldung. So if you're staying with someone or somebody, or maybe you're renting a room or apartment, the landlord or the person who rents for you can say, okay, Mikhail is living with me. Therefore, I will let him use my address, for example, to receive post mails. And then you need to go to the city hall. It's called the Bürgeramt. You need to set up a state that you have a place to stay. And from there, everything starts, basically. You can open up after that a bank account and do other arrangements. So you go there with all the documents. And another thing, because a lot of clerks there speak basic English, Sometimes you will need to have a translator, a German speaker that will come along with you. Of course, if you're lucky and they do understand your English, you can avoid that. But for me, because I started to study the German language as soon as I got here, I was able to speak a fluent German or let's say basic German really, really fast. So I was able to do do this arrangement myself.
And then how long does the process take? This is a week long, this is a month long, this is a year long. What is the time frame like?
It takes approximately 8 days, 10 days until you get the approval.
Wow, super fast.
But you have to schedule an appointment prior to your arrival. So sometimes it can take several weeks. If you have an urgent situation, you can go there immediately and say, hey, I have an urgent situation, and they may accept you.
Okay. And is there ever any instances where you're like overstaying this 90-day tourist visa and you haven't yet had your immigration process completed? How do they view this if you're overstaying?
A very, very interesting question. Okay. So what happened to me is since I wasn't able to find a job after 3 months, I actually found it after 4 months. I needed to go after 3 months to the Ausländerbehörde, to the immigration office. And I told them that I was searching for a job. But in order, and then they got me an extension, another 3 months extension. However, you need to prove that you have a purpose, that you're searching for a job. You need to show them your interviews, the fact that you're going to interviews, the fact that a company invited you for interviews. And then they say, okay, Mikhail is working, he's here to stay. And then they may extend your stay.
Okay. So you go through this process, you get accepted, you get your job, you have your immigration, you book your appointment. It takes a couple of weeks, maybe 8 days, you get your visa, you start working, you're working for 2 years, they give you a permanent, an unlimited visa to work in the country. What happens next? What happens after that? You can now change jobs wherever you want, or you have to stay tied to that one. Are you on a path to citizenship at this point? What does the next piece of the puzzle look like?
I'll explain, because there are two types of working visas in Germany. One is the closed working visa, and the other one is an open working visa. What's the difference? So the closed one means that you can only work in that specific company who provided you the sponsorship, all right? In case you want to change, you need to go once again to the immigration office and show them a new contract from a new company, and then you'll have a new visa, all right? Now, after 2 years, after, let's say, 24 salary slips, it doesn't have to be straight, you can go once again to the immigration office, and then they will open up your visa. It means that you will be able to work in any company that you want without, once again, requiring a sponsorship. All right, it's an open visa. So basically, it means it's like you're going around like you have a European passport. It's the same. You have an open visa. It happens only after you gain 24 salary slips.
Okay, so within that time period, for that first 24 months, you can only be in Germany. You can't travel across the border or anything like that. But after the 24 months, you can now travel freely in the European Union under your residency card?
No. It's got nothing to do with traveling. You can travel all around the world. I mean, it's got nothing to do with traveling. Traveling is not...
No, but so let's use an example. Or let's pick a country that doesn't have a very strong passport. They've entered into Germany, they get their residency, but they don't have a visa, they don't have a Schengen visa in their original passport to go and travel to Italy, because we've used Italy before as an example. Now with their residency, they can travel freely throughout Europe or not?
I'll explain. See, once you're entering Germany and you stay there, you fix up your residency, all right? You got to understand that in the Schengen area, you have open borders. You can take a train from Berlin to Paris, for example, and that's it. All right. Or, you know, you can go from Germany to Poland, take a train, and that's it. So there are free movement within Europe. All right. That's the thing.
That I understand. Don't Don't get me wrong. That I 100% understand. My question is, are you allowed to do it? Are you?
Of course. So you got nothing to do. Even if you came from, a third world country, once you set up your residency in Germany, there shouldn't be any problems.
Okay, because I'm thinking, for example, with my wife. My wife is from China. Every time we go to Europe, we need to get a Schengen visa. For example, another Chinese person would not be able to travel freely in there. Like even when we get a Schengen visa, even though if we want to travel throughout Europe, she has to enter into that one country and that's where she has to leave from as well. You know, we are planning a trip to Portugal. She has to fly into Portugal, even though we're going to go to Spain and other countries like that. That's the country that she has to go into. So I'm curious with this Germany, if you could fly domestically, if you could exit through other countries, if you could come and go. I'm wondering if it gives you special privileges or if there are no special privileges and it just works the same as it does for everyone else.
No, once you have residency, you are a resident of Germany. So you can travel around as you want. You just have to prove that you work in Germany and that's it. You know, a stamp on your passport and that's it, basically.
Okay, brilliant. And so immigration process heading towards citizenship, what does that look like?
I'm not a citizen yet. I'm still a resident. I'm only 5 years. But to gain a citizenship, you have to do a test in German. You don't have to be at a very high level. In the German language, I'm C1 level. C1 level. You can only finish B1 level, and then you can do the test. So it's very, very easy. Basically, you'll have to answer 17 questions correct out of 33, which is also not that hard. But you can do it after 7 or 8 years. It depends. It really depends. The conditions are constantly changing.
And does that time clock start once you get your sponsorship, or does that start once you get your unlimited residency visa?
So the clock starts once you get your sponsorship, and then you start to to gain more and more salary slips, which lead afterwards to permanent residency and afterwards to citizenship. That's the thing.
Okay. Amazing. Because I know some countries that we work in, it doesn't really start counting until a certain thing happens. You might already have lived in the country for 2 years, but the process to citizenship actually doesn't start until certain milestones. But if it actually starts at the beginning of your sponsorship, which could be in the first, 90 days or 120 days, like which was your case, actually you can start the process quite early.
Yes, but every step leads to another step. So you cannot gain the permanent residency unless you started to work. And then again, you cannot get the citizenship unless you have the permanent residency. But I must say that there are many types of visas in Germany. So you don't have to work for a company. You can be a freelancer and show them a proof that you're earning. You can have an artist visa. There are lots of visas. I mean, it really depends, all right? So what I'm saying is you don't have to be a salaried employee, okay? Mm-hmm. It really depends. You can also invest and start your own company, for example. Of course, you need to have capital for that. You can be a freelancer. You can have an artist visa. In my book, I also explain what kind of visas you can possess in Germany. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same here in Panama where I am. We have, I think, 22 different types of visas. We have retirement visas and investor visas, real estate visas. We even have reforestation. So if you put money into regrowing trees, you can get visas here. There's so many different types of visas. Usually we focus on what are the most popular ones. And it's interesting to hear about your experiences because this is the one that you actually went through. You went through a work permit type of residency program. You know, we've done other episodes on this show with citizenship by investment, where people came into Portugal, for example, put €500,000 down, got a golden visa, and then 5 years later are eligible for their passport. I mean, there's different countries that do different programs. But hearing about your experience, okay, what was it really like? What was it like when you went to the office? Okay, I had to speak basic German, which allowed me not to use this translator. I think those are cool and very interesting stories.
Yeah. And I, you know, when I wrote the book, I didn't want to be only an immigration guide. I also put a lot of emotional aspects in the book. So when you read the book, you feel like you're doing the immigration process together with me. You feel exactly how I feel. If I feel anger, if I feel, you know, disappointment, or so that's the thing. I show everything as it is. Because, you know, people think, hey, it's really cool. Let's move to Germany. Let's check it out. But it's not going to work this way. You know, immigration process is an emotional process. It's a life-changing process. You know, like any other field in life, you need to invest time. You need to work hard. And this is a reality. You know, this is how it goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's dive into the language a little bit. You said once you arrived there, then you started practicing. What was your experience like? Did you use online programs? Did you use books? Did you just talk to people? How was your methodology for learning, well, in your case, a third language, but for all intents and purposes, just a new language?
Okay. So what I do recommend, first of all, if you want to immigrate to Germany, I do suggest do not study German language before, unless you are really passionate about it. And I'll tell you why. And this is how I did it. When I arrived, I just went to a school, a formal institute, and I studied German there. And I met lots of people, lots of immigrants from all over the world who studied German together with me. I gained lots of friends. I also tell about it in the book. One of my best friends, he actually immigrated from Tunisia. I met him when I arrived and we studied the German language together. Afterwards in the book, I meet him again. I tell about that too. I meet him under different circumstances. But I've done it in the formal way. I wanted to be in a formal way. I wanted to be organized. I wanted to be, legit as possible. I wanted to meet new people. I wanted to exchange experiences. I didn't want to study it on my own. You know, when you do it formally, you do it in a proper way. You can ask questions. You have books. You have everything is organized. And I suggest to do it in Germany because it costs cheaper. That's the thing. Okay. When you do it outside, you can pay 5 times higher than the amount in Germany. That's why there is no need. You just come to Germany, study the German language inside Germany, in one of the institutes, you'll pay a lot less. That's why I recommend it.
So how much, while we're talking about numbers, how much would it be? Were you doing monthly classes and you would go like nights a couple times a week? What were the specifics and what were the costs like, if you can remember?
I'll explain. So when I arrived, I've started to study immediately. So I've done intensive courses. Intensive courses means that you go every day for 3.5 hours. You have intensive courses 5 times a week. And I've done it until I found my job. Now, after 4 months, I find a job. Then I applied for a visa. Luckily for me, you know, I started a month and a half later only working. So I had time to set up my working visa. And then I continued to study intensively until I worked. And then I switched to semi-intensive course, which means that I reduced it to 2 times per week. So after approximately 1 year and 9 months, I finished all of the levels, basically.
Okay. And what were they charging you for the intensive?
So the intensive, they don't charge if you do it intensively or not. They charge per level. So you have A1 level. If you do it intensively, they have A1.1, A1.2, which is A in general. If you do it intensively, it will take you 4 months. All right. So for each level, let's say A1.1, if you do it intensively, it will take you 1 month. Therefore, you can finish A1 and A2 after 2 months. So A1.1, it's actually cost me intensively 200 euros.
So cheap. For that much, that's like 80 some odd hours of class time.
Yeah, I'm talking about 2016. I don't know how much it costs now. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. So let's say A1, the entire A is 400, basically. So the entire level is 400. Multiplied, you have A, B, and C. So basically, 400 multiplied by 3, it costs 1,200.
1,200. Yeah, that's a lot of studying for not so much money, for sure.
Yes, but then again, I've done also. They have other courses like grammatic courses. They have like conversation courses. In those courses, they focus on conversations. So I've done also extra ones. So it cost me a bit more, but I've managed to cover everything. Now the highest level is considered to be C.2 basically, but 90% don't do it. They do it until C1, which is academic level basically.
Mm-hmm. And so with your German classes, how many people on average would be in a class? These are large classes, small classes?
No, approximately talking about 10, 15. Yeah, so that's the range.
Not too bad. And then when you were starting out, did you have a lot of supplemental material? Were you watching TV? Did you have friends, German friends? Were you practicing on the street? Did you do a lot of homework? Or was it really, this was it? You went and studied and then you went home and went on with your life?
Yeah. So when you do the intensive course, you don't have to do anything else. Believe me, you don't need to do any course.
Take
any,
a nap afterwards.
Yeah, it's enough. I've done my homework. I was very diligent. As I mentioned, I've done it with passion. I really like the German accent. I think it's one of the most beautiful languages in the world. So I did it. I've done it with love and passion. And I've done my homework. And after I finished my study, I continued to watch YouTube videos. I read books, and I maintained the skills, my German skills. Even today, I still watch, I'm able to speak fluently, but I still, I like to explore and develop it more and more.
Well, I remember 20 years ago when I started speaking Spanish or learning Spanish for the very first time, I was living in Guatemala and I was doing 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. And afterwards, I would be completely wrecked. I would like have to go and sit down. My brain was so tired after so much. So I can imagine after 3.5 hours for months and months and months on end, I mean, you must just want to decompress afterwards because there's so much information going in.
Exactly. That's why a lot of people are taking it easy. They don't necessarily do the intensive course. They like to do it, twice a week. It may take them more time, but, they're doing it in their own pace. That's why I always say, immigration is like a marathon run. Some people finish it after the fast runners can finish it below 3 hours. Some finish it 3 hours, 20 minutes, some finish it 4 hours, some more, but everybody will reach the finish line at the end.
So you mentioned briefly that a lot of your friends that you had made were through these language programs. Now, did you meet friends in other places? Have you played sports or joined organizations or groups? I'm kind of curious from the social side, were you able to have local friends? What did the locals think about you? How did you fit in as a person coming to Germany?
Another interesting question. I'll answer that. So you got to understand that Berlin is a very international city. My goal was to interact with the German society, but then again, you see a lot of foreigners all around. So it's not always possible. It's an international environment. But then again, in order to socialize, I found out through all of my my roommates when I was renting an apartment that there are some social gatherings all over the city. And in those gatherings, you can increase your circle of friends. You meet people from all over the world, immigrants like yourself. You also meet native German people. You meet people from all around the globe. And this is how I gained friends. This is how I met people who were like myself, trying to build their life, wanted to succeed. And it was a very, very good solution, a solution for the loneliness issue. So I also state that in my book that there are a lot of social gatherings. Berlin is a very lively city. You have parties, you have social gathering. It's not going to be boring, let's say this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that Meetup is often very popular. I think couch surfing sometimes, I mean, I've used that many, many years ago to meet friends. I know a lot of people use Internations. I've not really used that one, but there are a lot of web platforms which will actually help to gather people together. But it's good to hear that you do try to make an effort to meet a lot of the locals, but I understand being in an international city that sometimes it can be challenging to kind of cross that barrier and spend times with people who are actually born and raised there.
Yeah.
So if someone's listening to this episode today and they're thinking about Germany to immigrate to migrate to, you know, what would you tell them? You know, what would be your advice to them?
I would tell them, first of all, to read information before. That's a must. You must read. You must know more. You got to know what you're getting into. You got to prepare financially speaking also. I also state that in the book. And also, you got to understand, you got to know that anything is possible. If this is your passion, and it was my passion, you can achieve it. Anything is possible. And therefore, I always say, never give up your dream. Because, you know, I spoke to many immigrants, and all of them, without exception, they say that the immigration dream is worth any price. You'll have to work hard. You have to dedicate your life several years, but it's worth any price. You'll get a high quality of life, a better life, not only for yourself but for your future, your family. It's definitely worth the price.
Brilliant! I love it. Erez, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your experiences going through all of this. If my listeners, they want to find out more about what you do, if they want to get a hold of you, where can we send them?
Well, first of all, I would like to state that the book is available on Amazon, all of Amazon's region. You can purchase the paperback, the Kindle version as well. For me, they can find me also in a platform called Goodreads. It's actually a platform that allows authors to speak about their work, a very well-known one. And of course, you know, if they are passionate about the immigration process, if they want to get a better perspective, I will recommend them to read the book and enjoy it.
And give us the full title of the book again and where they can find it on Amazon.
The book is called Berlin's Immigration Secrets, and it's available on Amazon platform.
Amazon, perfect. Okay, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mikael. Appreciate it.
I hope you guys enjoyed today's interview. Before you guys go, what I want you to do is go to expatmoneyshow.com/language. Listen, if you guys are going to be an expat, a digital nomad, if you're going to travel, world school, all this fun stuff, build your business overseas, it's really important that you learn the local languages. Don't just go out there and speak only English. I promise you'll have a much richer experience. You'll get a lot more out of the relationships that you build. And you know what? It's honestly a lot of fun. So what I want you to do, if you guys are interested in learning another language, go to expatmoneyshow.com/language. You're going to be able to check out the really amazing language programs that my really good friend Ollie Richards does. I really like these programs. I fully endorse them. And you know what? My listeners have had great success with them over the years. So check it out. Go to expatmoneyshow.com/languages. And we will see you in next week's episode. Great. Have a good day.
This episode may be over, but your journey to greatness continues by visiting our webpage and signing up for our newsletter. For convenient access to new episodes, show notes, and other crucial resources, visit expatmoneyshow.com. We look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the Expat Money Show. Safe travels!
Every month, we offer exciting new webinars for our community. Topics include how to use retirement accounts to buy real estate overseas, how to get a second passport in Latin America, why you should sell your stock portfolio and move your money offshore, how to buy beachfront rental properties in Brazil for less than $100,000 or apartments in Paraguay for less than $60,000. If you want to join us for free for these presentations with live Q&A, insider secrets, and exclusive opportunities with my professional network of experts, then go to expatmoney.com/webinars. That's expatmoney.com/webinars to register for free upcoming presentations. expatmoney.com/webinars.